Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. And I am joined, I was going to say joined in studio, but we are not in studio. We are broadcasting from NRB, National Religious Broadcasters, Proclaim 18. This is the 75th annual convention. Jim Stanley is sitting with me. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, sir. Now, you have probably made all 75 of those.
I'm not that old. Sometimes no? I feel like I'm that old, but we are here in the Opryland, Gaylord Opryland Hotel. What's the big name?
Convention Center. I believe the official name is now the Gaylord Opryland Hotel by Marriott.
By Marriott.
Yes. Well, and that just changed year before last when we were here. And so that was quite the mouthful, so we just stuck with the Opryland Hotel.
Well, yeah. I'm going to have Jim Stanley explain why we're here in just a minute. Want to also bring in from our studios at our flagship station in Tupelo, Mississippi, Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning, Ed, and good morning, Jim.
Good morning, sir.
Now, Walker, my understanding is we are on camera both from Nashville and Tupelo, right? You guys?
In Nashville. So folks can see the live feed from Nashville. This sounds creepy, but I'm watching you and Jim.
Well, now, and see, here's the thing. If Walker had his priorities straight,
yeah,
he would be here with us broadcasting.
Yes.
But instead, he and his wife chose this moment to have a baby.
I know. New baby, that, blah, blah, blah. I
the
can't
new
make
hasn't
it.
Worn off yet, so daddy's got to be home to help take care of that.
That's right. My brother actually has about a three-week-old.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So he's not here. And then I have an eight-month-old in between, you know, watching him and taking him to his grandmother's during the day. I keep busy. So I got to – when I travel, it has to be a very, very valid excuse.
Well, I know four hours in a car with a baby is not easy. So,
yeah.
All right. And then also I think Fred Jackson is there. Fred, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here because I'm not there. tomorrow I'll wear my Nashville Predator hat and I'll just pretend.
Oh, for those of you who know, that's the hockey team here in Nashville. And Fred,
well, I think shouldn't you preface that for those who know and care?
that is absolutely true. And more I'm discovering that. In Nashville, a few other places in the South, people do care about hockey. But
hey, you better be careful. You're in Nashville, and that town has gone hockey. So
yeah, they are. They have a great, great hockey team here in Nashville, if you can believe it, folks. So, all right. Now, before we get to the news with Fred and Walker, Jim, tell us a little bit about what are we doing in Nashville? What is NRB? Why is it important for religious broadcasters to convene like they do once a year?
Well, one of the things that we do while we're here is that we meet with our partner ministries. In fact, I just spent some time with Dr. Richard Land as we were both in line at the same time to get our registration IDs, which I picked up yours for you as well.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I gave that to Diane as well. Ed's lovely bride.
Yep.
And so, but then also throughout this time, we'll have different meetings with different folks and just kind of reaffirm those partnerships that we have. But also, it's a time for national religious broadcasters to stand together. And one of the ways that we do that is this event every year. And so there are thousands of broadcasters from across the country who are gathered here in basically a city within the city of Nashville here at the Opryland. And so our broadcast is actually made possible in part by our friends from Operation Christmas Child, of course, a ministry of Samaritan's Purse. And so they bless us with the opportunity to be here and broadcast, and that's a big help to us, and we thank them for that support. And as many of you know, throughout the year, they're constantly looking for volunteers to help with the Operation Christmas Child shoeboxes because they deliver those throughout the year. The main push is during Christmas, but then they'll distribute those to different countries around the world throughout the year. And so that's kind of neat as well.
Yeah.
And so a lot of ministry goes on. There are prayer teams constantly praying around, and you'll see that. It's not uncommon to see folks in the, you know, on the walkways just stopping to pray, you know, for each other, and there'll be a lot of fellowship and things that take place. And so that's one of the primary reasons we're here, is just to have some, there are some good seminars as well that take place, some educational seminars. And so there's just a host of things. There'll be some great speakers. In fact, Vice President Pence will be speaking this afternoon. I believe his program starts a little after 1, and he'll be speaking to the folks here at NRB. And so that will be, you know, today, right after lunch.
Well, and before we let you go, Jim, you know, obviously radio is important, mm-hmm. for American Family Radio, for our listeners. But this is, again, we're in Nashville for the National Religious Broadcasters. The name for this year's gathering is Proclaim 18. But this is the 75th annual convention. Now, Just give a plug for radio, because you know, there was a time here within the last 10 years people said radio's going to die.
Right.
Everyone's going to be going to, you know, whatever, their iPods and whatever. But radio has been, since its inception, has been a tool that has been used by God and used by God's people as an avenue for the truth, for the gospel, for ministering to people's needs. I mean, this is an important instrument. We've got you know, in April we have Share-a-thon coming
right.
up, when we ask people to help support the ministry of American Family Radio. But all year round, not just us, but there are a lot of God's people that use radio to reach people with the gospel all around the world. I mean, this is an effective medium, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. And the thing about National Religious Broadcasters is, for us, our focus is on radio. However, over the last 10 years and you know, longer than that, they've begun to incorporate the other media as well. They'll have movies here that are going to be screened and then shown in theaters later that come from a faith-based background. They will also have different TV ministries here. And so it's a time that just kind of the different mediums that they come together for this event, because in one way or another, they're all religious broadcasters. But for us, we focus on the radio side. And when I tell you there are thousands of radio broadcasters here, that's, I don't say that just to make it sound bigger than it is. There really are. And during the next few days as we're here, tomorrow will be a big day because more folks will come in today, and the exposition itself actually begins officially tomorrow. By the way, tomorrow you folks will be joined by Dr. Jim Garlow.
Okay.
Dr. Garlow is a good friend to the ministry of AFA, and we're a friend to his. In fact, many of you will remember the campaign in California a few years ago regarding Proposition 51.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Jim Stanley, who's general manager for all of American Family Radio for the entire network. I don't know. He may pop in here and there today.
Be happy to.
Be a voice that you will hear. Thanks again.
Yes,
Jim.
Sir. Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. All right, Fred, what kind of news do we have? My wife and I were traveling yesterday, and what's been happening? I'm sure it's been a slow news day, as it typically is.
Not at all. You know, from time to time, if you've listened to American Family Radio over the last years, you may have heard the term activist judges. Everybody heard of that before?
It rings a bell.
Rings a bell. Well, we had another case of it yesterday, and I tell you what, a headline was this, court U.S. anti-discrimination law covers sexual orientation. Federal Appeals Court, it's the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, ruling yesterday, became the second one in the country to break with precedent and rule that U.S. anti-discrimination law protects employees from being fired because they are homosexual. All right? So the ruling in this case involved a skydiving instructor who said he was fired after he told a client he was a homosexual. And so the second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Manhattan said that while it, now listen to this, folks, very carefully, while it and other courts around the U.S. had previously found that Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act didn't cover sexual orientation. So, yeah, through the years, all these other courts said, no, it doesn't cover homosexuality. Title VII of the 1967 Civil Rights Act. Listen to what these judges said They said, quote, legal doctrine evolves. So it doesn't really matter what the law book says anymore, folks. You've got these judges that sit with their black robes and they say, you know what? I just feel that that law should be extended to this group of individuals, even though I know what the law states. I just feel it should include these individuals over here. I tell you what, we interviewed Matt Barber on this yesterday, very well known to our audience, an expert on constitutional law and legal matters in general. And he said, this is textbook case of judicial activism. He says, if the law evolves as this judge claims based on the whims of any given rogue judge, then we have entered, listen to this, folks, we have entered anarchy.
Well, that's absolutely right, Fred. I mean, that ruling is an outrage, and I appreciate what Matt Barber is sharing. Here's the thing, folks. When we talk about judicial activism, what we're talking about is two mutually exclusive, two distinct ways of looking at the Constitution. The Constitution lays out rights that are protected in the Bill of Rights. And if you want to change that, if you want to create a constitutional right, for example, when women were given the right to vote, a constitutional amendment was passed, expanding the franchise, so to speak. And if you want to increase the number of rights that will be protected by the Constitution and therefore by the federal judiciary, the founding fathers established a way for you to do that. You have to convince your fellow voters that it's a good idea, because it is a high bar to amend the Constitution and add a right. Same thing happened when they gave 18-year-olds the right to vote in this country. Well, that's part of the political process established by our founding fathers. You have to enter into the public debate, convince your fellow voters to see things your way, so that when a particular amendment comes to your state for a vote, you vote for it. Now, because so many people don't agree with the progressive, quote-unquote, the progressive movement, what they do is they look for judges who will circumvent the voting process. And that is what has happened here. Title VII does not mention homosexuality. It mentions and forbids discrimination on the basis of sex. That has always been understood to mean you can't discriminate against women or men on the basis of sex. And what these judicial activists have done is they have circumvented the process, and there is no stopping point. Walker, when Matt Barber says we have entered into anarchy, that is exactly what we have. If judges refuse to follow precedent, mm-hmm. and refuse to either understand or hold themselves under the authority of the Constitution, because they can essentially do whatever they want.
Yeah, this is a two-way street, and I don't think it shouldn't frustrate conservatives or Christians, just it should frustrate all Americans. The reason I say that is because this table could be turned. Judges stepping out of line, out of authority, and basically ignoring 100 years of court rulings to do this could be turned the other way. And the left, they may like this court ruling, but if it were flipped the opposite and gone against them, they would be crying bloody murder. So either way, no matter where you stand in the political aisle, judges ignoring the Constitution, ignoring multiple decades of court precedent and the actual black letter of the law, that should be concerning to everyone.
Well, Fred, that's a great point that Walker has raised. Because this does cut both ways. Now, President Trump, when he was candidate, Trump promised to appoint constitutionalists to the federal judiciary. And by that, he meant that he would appoint individuals who respect the words of the Constitution and don't see it as a quote-unquote living document that can be twisted any way a liberal judge expects it to be twisted. So if he's in for 8 years, he could have a big impact on the federal judiciary. So what would the progressives, this is a rhetorical question, kind of tongue-in-cheek like Tim does on occasion, Tim Wildman. If one of those federal appellate courts said, you know what, federal law and constitutional law evolves, we're going to change Roe versus Wade, and we are going to ban abortion because we think the law should keep up with the times. We're going to ignore Roe versus Wade because we're not going to follow precedent. What do you think the reaction would be from the left?
There would be a huge cry about it, and all the liberal networks would be out there getting these progressives on TV every night and basically saying that the country's going to fall apart. That's what they would be saying. But, as Tim has said so many times, elections have consequences, folks, and one of the huge consequences is who gets to decide who is nominated for these courts and the kinds of people. As you have mentioned, candidate Trump, now President Trump, promised to put strict constitutionalists on the court. But unfortunately, during the 8 years of President Barack Obama, he certainly didn't follow that thinking. He wanted activist judges on the court. And you look back over recent court decisions, judges who have made decisions with regards to President Trump's desire to put restrictions on who immigrates to this country, you look back at who nominated these judges. Very often you will find President Barack Obama. He is the one that put them into office. In fact, I was reading an article this morning, and I've read similar terms before. We are still living, the United States, when it comes to court decisions, we are living under President Barack Obama's third term. Now, what do people mean by that? Because of the judges that he nominated and were passed through, remember, the Senate, the Democrats were in control of the Senate, filibuster, what's that? We just need 50 votes, that's it. Right. Remember that? So they put hundreds of judges into place, Barack Obama judges, they're still out there, and that's why people are saying we're still living under what they call the third term of Barack Obama. There are long-lasting effects as to who you put in the White House, who controls Congress, and people need to remember that even coming up now in a few months, November 2018.
Yeah, and that is the direct result of the increasing power, escalating power of the federal judiciary, that elections have such consequences because you have judges who are making these kinds of rulings. So that impact from an election is increased exponentially because of the oligarchy that our federal judiciary has become. All right, well, we are going to continue to watch this ruling, the outflow from it, the impact of it, whether it gets appealed to the Supreme Court, what else will happen with regards to it. This is a tremendous, potentially tremendously harmful ruling in terms of religious liberty in this country. We'll continue to follow that and the fallout from it. All right, Fred, what else you got on the news front?
Well, the other big story continues to be the controversy surrounding Sheriff Scott Israel in Broward County, Florida. The controversy has been, we're learning more and more, that his deputies really stood back and did nothing during the tragic shooting at that high school now back almost 2 weeks ago. And that has prompted a full investigation by the legislature there in Florida. In fact, this morning on Fox and Friends, we heard from Florida State Representative Matt Caldwell. He's a Republican. And basically, the heat is on. The pressure is on for this sheriff to step down. So I want you to hear what Representative Caldwell had to say in this interview about Sheriff Scott Israel on this interview this morning on Fox and Friends. Cut number one.
Not only should he resign, but if he refuses to, I think the governor should remove him. You look at what happened in this incident where the deputies failed to respond, failed to go inside. We're hearing now in news reports this morning that may have been because they didn't have body cameras. They were told not to go inside. A lot of questions in that regard. And even worse, you look at the incidences that happened before the shooting, all of the times in which somebody called and said, hey, this guy's got problems. Hey, this guy's doing something criminal. And we've got stories and reports coming out of Broward and Dade County that this actually might be coordinated, that the sheriff's office and the school district, in order to game their numbers and look like they're doing better than they are, weren't actually arresting kids who are committing real crimes.
Now, we want to, in case some of our audience don't understand what the representative was talking about there, there have been reports now over the last couple of weeks that in order to get federal grants, some of the conditions of getting federal grants had to be in a given county, in this case Broward County, that they had to reduce the number of infractions or law breaking by young people in high schools. So the allegation here is that this sheriff basically got together with the school district and they decided they were going to turn the other way when crimes were being committed by students.
Okay, now let me see if I understand this. Because one of the conditions for getting federal money, these grants, was you have to show a decrease in crimes committed by young people. They basically said, well, then fine, we won't arrest young people for the crimes, and it'll look like arrests for crimes by young people have gone down. Is that what you're saying?
That is the allegation that's there, and that mentality contributed, this is the allegation, contributed to these sheriffs of Broward County or the deputies of Broward County not being more aggressive when they got to the scene of that crime.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, and on another thing, Ed, to help kind of clarify things, what we're talking about is mainly leading up to this incident, leading up to the shooting. The police, we know, went over 30 times to the gunman's home for various reasons, and some of those calls met the requirements for him to be arrested or charged, but there were no charges or arrests that we know of. So to Fred's point, the sheriff's department, it looks like they were kind of soft on Mr. Cruz and other young people in the county, but simply because they were trying to meet that quota. And I know a story I'm reading right now says that police responded to not 23, but 45 calls to Cruz's home. Cruz is the gunman.
Yeah, so we're talking about Nicholas Cruz, who we've all heard about the tragedy, the shooting, the aftermath of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And Nicholas Cruz is the one who was arrested by police. He's been charged with, I think at this point, still 17 cases of capital murder.
Yeah.
So the police went, I'd heard 39, so it's gone up. So 45 times they were called to and went to Cruz's home. And on some of those occasions, it should have been arrested, but now word is getting out that possibly in order to get these funds, he was not arrested because it was part of a kind of a strategy on the part of the Broward Sheriff's Office to not make as many arrests of young people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't see how this Sheriff Scott Israel is going to survive this one. I really don't. With the legislature on it, we also know the Attorney General Pam Bondi is investigating this as well. And I think when the truth comes out, it's going to show that at least in part, the incompetence, the directives given by this sheriff's department under this Sheriff Scott Israel certainly contributed to that. Now, here's what's interesting. You're only going to hear this side of the story on very few networks. What the other networks, and we'll talk about this when we come back after the break, what the networks want to talk about is gun control.
Right.
That's their focus. It is all about gun control. And that the tragic incident all had to do with not enough gun control in place. We want to talk about that because that was the topic of discussion yesterday at the White House when President Trump met with governors from across the country.
All right, well, we're going to take a short break here. You're listening to American Family Radio. In today's issues, we are broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, where we are attending the National Religious Broadcasters Convention, Proclaim 18. Ed Vitagliano, along with Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman. We're going to take a short break, folks. When we come back, more for today's issues. Please join us.
On the next Today's Issues, it'll be another day of live broadcasting from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville. Tim and Ed will be exploring available ministry resources and comparing notes with like-minded ministries. We expect to be joined on air by several ministry partners. And of course, we'll be taking a look at the latest in the news from a Christian worldview. That's next time on Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
You shall not murder. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. We are asking schools all over America to put this on their marquees, put this on their signs out in front of their school for 1 week to remind America's students that innocent life is precious. Help us spread the word about this campaign to your friends and family. Please go to our website, afa.net, afa.net, and sign our open letter to America's schools. We need to proclaim this message, "You shall not murder," across the land. Why? Because gun control alone will not solve matters of the heart. We need our young people to understand that murder is a violation of God's law, and also it's a violation of the laws all across this land. So help us. Go to afa.net and spread the word.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. A well-respected Christian club at Harvard University has been punished after they allegedly forced a bisexual woman to resign from a leadership position for dating a woman. Harvard College Faith in Action was put on administrative probation for a year, charged by the Ivy League school with conducting itself in a manner grossly inconsistent with student guidelines. The student newspaper says the Bible study leader's forced ouster violates discrimination laws regarding sexual orientation. But the club maintains they were simply following the tenets of their long-held religious beliefs to remain celibate until marriage. The issue is whether Harvard will allow Christian clubs, or any other club for that matter, to set leadership requirements based on their values and beliefs. Because as it stands right now, Harvard's non-discrimination policy actually discriminates against Christians. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments at afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. We are broadcasting from Proclaim 18, the National Religious Broadcasters Convention in Nashville, Tennessee. We'd like to thank our friends at Operation Christmas Child for their support, which helps make this broadcast possible. We would like to thank them for helping us broadcast from NRB 18. And this is today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. I am joined by Fred Jackson and Walker Wildman. Fred, what else do you want to talk? Did you want to add something else and talk about something else with regards to this Broward County story, or are we done with that?
Well, it's connected to the Broward County and the tragic shooting at the high school there where 17 kids died. We're all familiar with coming out of that. There's been another call, more gun control, more gun control, more gun control. Yesterday, the governors from across the country are holding their winter meeting in Washington, D.C. President Trump took the opportunity to meet with these governors and discuss with them, okay, what proposals are out there? What are you talking about? And a couple of things that have been seen to be in favor even with the president. He's willing to talk about putting certain restrictions on what kinds of guns can be bought, on ages, maybe raising the age to 21, that kind of thing. He said, the president did, that he's been talking with the NRA, and he believes that they are willing to work with legislators on perhaps changing some of the laws And, of course, there's a debate about do we really need to do that. Anyway, a number of the governors yesterday who were at this meeting at the White House, and it turned into – it was broadcast on various networks for 2 or 3 hours. So it was very interesting. It was typical President Trump style, and he's very good in that environment. But I want to play you a couple of cuts of the – a couple of the governors. One of them was Governor Jay Inslee of Washington. And, you know, the movement towards making adjustments to gun purchases, ages, and that sort of thing, that wasn't enough for him. And he was quite critical of President Trump right there in the open with his fellow governors. So it'll be cut number three.
Now, I know that you have suggested arming our teachers. And
no,
I just...
No,
I
no,
just,
not your teachers. It would just be a very small group of people that are very gun adept. Anyway, go ahead, Governor.
If I may respond to that, let me just suggest whatever percentage it is, I heard at one time you might have suggested 20%. Whatever percentage it is, speaking as a grandfather,
right,
speaking as a governor of the state of Washington, I've listened to the biology teachers and they don't want to do that at any percentage. I've listened to the first grade teachers that don't want to be pistol packing first grade teachers. I've listened to law enforcement who have said they don't want to have to train teachers as law enforcement agencies, which takes about 6 months. Now, I just think this is a circumstance where we need to listen, that educators should educate, and they should not be foisted upon this responsibility of packing heat in first grade classes. So I just suggest we need a little less tweeting here, a little more listening, and let's just take that off the table and move forward.
There he is, Governor Jay Inslee of Washington State. Shouldn't be surprised that he is a Democrat. First of all, he was misrepresenting what the president and others have stated. No teacher is going to be forced to be armed. That's not on the table at all. What they are talking about is that in various school districts across the country, when you have men and women, male and female teachers, who already have a concealed carry permit, or whatever the case may be, or who volunteer and say, I want to be one of those that is able to carry my weapon into the school so I can protect the students and fellow teachers. That is what's being talked about. No one, and for the governor of Washington State to suggest that teachers would be forced to get training and wear weapons, Walker and Ed, that is simply not true.
Well, this is why I don't trust people on the left, okay, when it comes to this issue, all right? And it's for the reasons you've cited, and it's also the emotion-laden language that's always used. Now, obviously, it's a very emotional time, especially for the people in Florida and Broward County, but the country as well, yet another school shooting. There is emotion connected with that, but you can't make... You can't pass laws based on emotion. You have to think these things through. So when he says, I don't think we should have first grade teachers, you know, packing heat in their classroom, I'm thinking, you know what? If I have a first grader in there and a shooter comes to my kid's elementary school, I want someone on the premises protecting them. We saw what happened at this school, the shooting in Parkland, Florida, where you had sheriff's deputies sitting outside while this murderer, this cold-blooded killer, was killing one kid after another. And if you want to use emotion-laden language, Mr. Governor, then how about we couldn't rely on the Broward County Sheriff's Department to protect us? I wish there was a high school biology teacher with a gun that could have saved some lives. That's the way I look at it, and this is why I don't trust people calling for gun control. If we were really having a logical, reasonable discussion about what we might be able to do around the edges, I don't think it's going to stop any of these shooters. But I'm for making some changes around the edges if they're reasonable. But I think the ultimate goal of people like this governor and others on the left is to take away guns. Now, they said, no, we don't want to take away guns for hunting. I think they want to make it like Australia and the UK, where you're allowed a, you know, a two-barrel shotgun or a bolt-action hunting rifle. That's all you get. I think that's what they ultimately want to do, and I think they would even be willing to limit ammunition and so on and so forth. Now, Walker, you're a hunter. You're more of a gunman than I am. What do you think about this kind of language? You trust people on the left?
Well, no, I don't. And here's the thing. The governor of Washington and others, they think that law-abiding gun owners are nitwits who have no idea. We're out of touch with reality. We don't even know what 2 + 2 equals. That's the way we get treated. That's the way the NRA members get treated. And we're not the people who are law-abiding citizens who have carry licenses and own weapons. We're not the problem. We're not the people going in schools shooting up people. And so that's what the core of what the Washington governor's comments are, is that we can't trust law-abiding citizens, law-abiding teachers to carry firearms. And then he uses the first grade teacher example. Look, like you said, Ed, if a first grade teacher goes to a certain permitting class and takes several hours, maybe a couple of days of firearm training, getting up to date on what the law is and how to use it, when to use it, if to use it, then I'm fine with that. That's better than having nobody armed. I would rather have a teacher. And there's also this false premise that somehow that students are going to get hurt if teachers carry firearms. That's not this is all based on that we don't know what we're doing, that law-abiding citizens don't know what we're doing. So if you have people with proper training, proper permits, and who go by the law, then this should be a no-brainer.
Well, and I think, Fred, part of the ludicrous nature of these leftist arguments is, listen, I think any parent would be horrified to hear that at their local school where their kid is, a gunfight has broken out between teachers and a shooter. Yeah. I mean, people would be horrified to hear that, because when it's your kids, there's nothing there but panic. But the question is, what is the best option available to protect the greatest number of kids? And I would rather have several teachers with handguns yelling for students to get on the ground and returning fire and trying to kill somebody who's got a gun intending to use it, than for these poor kids to be stuck in classrooms under their desk waiting for the law enforcement to get there. So the question is, what is the best option? And I think Walker has laid it out perfectly. Those teachers who would like to be responsible enough to get the proper training and to carry, I don't see any option that's better than that, other than having a police substation at every school in America. What do you think, Fred?
Well, absolutely. And there was another governor that I think had much more a common sense approach to all of this. And we shouldn't be surprised. It's the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. And he was at that meeting at the White House yesterday. And the approach in Texas, he says, his state allows a school marshals program. And they even post signs to that effect outside. It's cut number two.
Texas authorized schools to adopt policies to implement a school marshal program where individuals would be trained to have a weapon, right, and to be able to use that weapon. And we now have well over 100 school districts in the state of Texas where teachers or other people who work in the school do carry a weapon and are trained to be able to respond to an attack that occurs. It's a well thought out program with a lot of training in advance. And candidly, some school districts, they promote it because they will have signs out front, a warning sign that be aware there are armed personnel on campus.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're out for a walk and you see a sign on a neighbor's lawn that says, beware of dog.
Right.
The likelihood of you even innocently wandering into the backyard of that house is pretty tiny because of that sign that you've seen. So, again, we ought not to be surprised. I want to play you one more cut. Excuse me. And this comes from Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin. And he is one of the newest governors out there. A lot of common sense. He wanted to address at this governor's meeting at the White House yesterday the real underlying reason of the problem. He says it's not guns. We've got to look at what's going on in our culture. Cut number four.
I do think it's important for us to start at every level with your office, with our respective offices as well, to seize the bully pulpits that we have to talk about the culture in this society. And when we mock and ridicule the very foundational principles that this nation was built upon, where you treat people the way you'd want to be treated, where you respect human life, where you respect the dignity of women and of children and of people who we have increasingly degraded in our society. This culture of death is becoming pervasive. And if it's not addressed by all the imperfect people in this room with a sense of purpose and a sense of aspiration, I think we're going to see a continued trajectory that's not good. Many things have not changed. There have always been guns, and there were fewer restrictions. Right. There have always been guns in homes and fewer rules. It isn't to say that these rules and these restrictions are necessarily bad. But what has changed is what we do or don't do as it relates to acknowledging the value and the dignity of every human life.
Boy, I tell you, Ed, that'll preach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it will, and that's the Governor Bevin of Kentucky, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, that is a sound approach, a reasonable approach to what we've seen, because as he points out, if you look at the number of guns, the availability of guns, the kinds of restrictions have grown on guns, but if it's just guns that cause these shootings, then our country would have been awash in these kinds of shootings over its entire history. This has always been a nation of guns. This is why the leftists, the liberals in other countries like Australia and the UK, other places in Europe, they're always ridiculing or speaking with alarm at the number of guns in America. What has changed? What has changed in this country is the culture. And we have moved from a culture of life, from a culture that is based upon the Ten Commandments, for example. We frequently on this program, well, every once in a while at least, quote Harry Truman, a Democrat who is president of the United States, when he addressed a conference of the attorneys general back in the early 1950s. It was a conference about the problems that law enforcement was having with organized crime. And he said, this is a Democrat, Harry S. Truman, we have got to continue, we've got to go back, he said, to teaching our kids about the Ten Commandments in schools. He said, if we don't, we're going to wind up with a government that is tyrannical. What has changed in this culture is the culture. Guns are not the problem, Walker. And boy, I just have to applaud Governor Bevin of Kentucky for making an argument that should be made more often rather than CNN's approach, which is to talk endlessly about gun control.
Yeah, that's right. And really, this is a reflection of how our students are, or what our students are being taught and the culture they're living up in. And as Governor Bevin said, it's a culture of death. The video games teach death. The movies teach death. And often that's all our students get. The music they listen to is often very vile and explicit. It all devalues human life, and that's a really a problem, and it cuts at the core of it. So that's good to hear from Governor Bevin.
Yeah, a little bit of common sense in getting, I think, right. One more point on the whole gun debate that's going on. You may have heard there are a number of companies that seem to blame the NRA, and they have ended their relationship with the NRA. And basically what it was, there were certain companies that gave members of the NRA a cut rate on their what they supply. And airlines, First National Bank of Omaha, Hertz, MetLife, those are just some of the companies. Well, one of the companies was Delta Airlines. And the president of the Georgia Senate doesn't like the fact that Delta now has cut ties with the NRA. And he says he will prevent Delta Airlines from receiving a lucrative tax cut unless it reestablishes its discount program with the National Rifle Association. So there you have it. You know, these companies just feel, we don't think that we get much out of this deal with the NRA. We're just going to go out there and make a political statement, and we think the world will like us for it. Well, I think at least Delta Airlines is getting a shock out of this, and rightly so.
I love that kind of thing. That kind of pressure can go both ways. Hey, one thing I want to make sure our listeners are aware of, and it does tie into this discussion about gun control, or at least the discussion about the culture and what happened in Parkland, Florida. If our listeners will go to AFA.net, we are asking them to sign an open letter to America's schools. Now, what they can do, right, they go to AFA.net. There is a banner right there where it says sign the petition. We are asking folks to do this, and we are asking every school in the country to put this statement on their school marquee or school sign for 1 week. All right, folks, here's what we're asking schools to put on their marquee. You shall not murder. Now, the kind of this campaign has got a little hashtag kind of a aspect to it. Hashtag number 6. That is the 6th commandment of the 10 commandments. You shall not murder. Now, the reason we're doing this initiative from AFA, is while the country is discussing gun control laws, and as Fred just mentioned, Walker and I, we've been talking about this for the majority of this hour. We also think our young people should be reminded that innocent human life is precious. Murder is against the law in every state. These four words also emphasize that it's morally wrong. Now, part of the argument we're making here is that schools regularly use words to encourage and discourage behavior on the part of the young people who attend school. We tell students, say no to bullying, don't text and drive, say no to drugs, don't drink and drive, those kinds of things, or don't drink at all. It's illegal underage. But in light of the increasing violence in our schools, we want to send a clear message, you shall not murder. So we are asking, and this is starting to get a lot of play, we want this to go viral. We want this discussion in America. This is the way for it to unfold, we believe, because we have the Supreme Court ruled in 1980, schools could not post the Ten Commandments in school. I don't want to oversimplify our problems. As Governor Bevin of Kentucky is pointing out, there are a lot of cultural problems that are going on in our country. But Walker, one of the things we want to do is to start this discussion that the more we distance ourselves from God's laws, the more chaos, anarchy, and moral discord we're going to have in this nation.
Yeah, that's right. We need to start teaching our kids like we were doing before the 60s and 70s, the Ten Commandments. They need to be posted in school. And I know one of the court rulings, I think it was the court ruling that basically withdrew the Ten Commandments from schools. The basic argument, I believe, on behalf of the judge was that students will be influenced by the Ten Commandments if they actually read them. That's a good thing. That's a good thing because, as you mentioned, Ed, pretty much everything in the Ten Commandments when it comes to harming others, such as killing, such as murder, such as theft, etc., all those are already laws in the books, federal laws and state laws. So we need to be reaffirming our kids. And so what if students learn good morals from the Bible? So what? I think it will help our country. But at the end of the day, this all points back to families, the breakdown of the family. It is ultimately the job of parents to teach their children what is right and wrong. And oftentimes, in examples of mass shootings, troubled kids, we learn that they had a broken home life, and that's the core issue here.
Well, and it is extraordinary, Walker, as you pointed out, that when the Supreme Court banned the posting of the Ten Commandments in schools across America, their actual ruling said that if you post the Ten Commandments on school hallway walls or in classrooms, the students will read them and they will be encouraged to obey them. And the Supreme Court said that was unconstitutional. And again, I'm not, Fred, trying to oversimplify our problems in this country, but I think what it does is when you take these things out from in front of kids, they not only don't have the Ten Commandments to be encouraged to obey them, now they're obeying other things, and we all know that the culture has made our country a country that promotes violence in movies, television, a lot of video games. I'm not just saying that's the only problem in our country, but when you replace the Ten Commandments with that, you are going to get a certain percentage like Nicholas Cruz who are going to go off the deep end, and unfortunately, they're taking a lot of people with them.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, with that court ruling, I remember that and the discussion around it, that the kids might be influenced by it. Yep. And that was a reason to remove the Ten Commandments. That's what we need more. But, you know, it has to be reinforced at our churches. It has to be reinforced in our homes.
Right.
And it has to, what a great idea it would be for universities. And that's kind of a segue into our next story, Ed, in that in the Bible Belt, you might not expect this, but at Mississippi State University on Thursday, there is going to be a presentation by an abortionist, Dr. Willie Parker, and he prides himself apparently in traveling around the country, particularly in the South, performing abortions. And this event, he's going to be speaking as part of the gender studies program at Mississippi State University. The event is titled Abortion and the, are you ready for this, folks? Abortion and the Christian Case for Choice. Hmm. Now, Walker, the American Family Association is taking steps to alert people to this.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe. You might expect this, I mean, sometimes, you know, in a secular university in Minnesota, but it's in the Bible Belt, Mississippi State University,
yeah,
in Starkville, Mississippi. And I know we have a lot of graduates from Mississippi State University that listen to this program. And I'm sure they would be shocked to know that this guy who says there's a Christian argument for abortion.
Yeah, Ed, this is very disturbing, and I know we've been talking about this at least internally for the last week or so. It's very disturbing, not because the doctor, Dr. Parker's coming to speak, and he has a very, very vile and it's an unbiblical view of life is what it is. But the fact that there's no opposing viewpoint, Ed, that's being heard and brought in by the university, that's what's most troubling to us.
Yeah, and this is not this is something that we learned I learned at the tail end of last week. See, most colleges and universities have student fees, and they have student groups that get a portion of those fees. They can bring anybody they want in. You know, listen, we're all for freedom of speech and kids getting a wide variety of viewpoints. But am I right, Walker, in understanding that this isn't student fees?
Right.
This is state money that goes to the university that is being spent on one particular view, and it's a religious view.
Yes.
I mean, it is state money supporting a pro-abortion view, supposedly Christian. This is an outrage, and I got to say, and one other thing I want to say before, and Walker, now you've been in the office a little bit more than I have this week. But we also asked Mississippi State University for information on how much Mississippi State was paying Dr. Parker to come and speak. What is his honorarium? Have we found out that amount yet?
No. The university, we reached out multiple times asking for the financial information regarding this event, how much the speaker was being paid, and none of that financial information was provided. So that's very disturbing. Ed.
Even though they promised they would give it to us.
Yes. They confirmed that the information is on its way. It's just going through one person. Somehow, the information never made it to us. So we don't know how much he's being paid.
Well, we're going to continue to find out. We're not letting this go. We're going to demand that the university pay for an opposing viewpoint from the Christian viewpoint on this issue. All right, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. You're listening to Today's Issues. We're broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, the National Religious Broadcasters. We would like to thank our friends at Operation Christmas Child for their support, which helps make this broadcast possible. We'll be back in 5 minutes, folks. The news is next. Please join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.